Sour by Misha here with the Mix Talk. This is Misha. Hope everybody had a great week and enjoying the sunshine and the warmer weather. I want to introduce myself for those that are just tuning in for the first time this week. Welcome. I am a certified tarot instructor with the Tarot Certification Board of America. I'm also their executive director. My website is www.tarotbymisha.com. The TCBA's website is www.tarotcertification.org. You can get all the certification information, the 7 levels, the contact info as well. If you'd like to get a hold of me by email, my email is tarotbymisha@aol.com. Have an author on this evening. I want to welcome Pamela K. Kinney. Pam, how are you?
Fine, and thank you for having me tonight.
Thanks for coming on. Night of Ghosts. Stories. I want to also give out the phone number if anybody would like to chime in with the conversation or speak with Pamela tonight. The number is 888-345-3025. Outside the U.S. and Canada, the phone number is 740-994-0101. And we're going to be talking tonight a lot about two of your books that you've written, Haunted Richmond and Haunted Virginia. First, I want to start with a little background on yourself. I know that you were writing since about the age of 7. And you were actually 17 years of age, I believe, when you actually had some of your poems that you wrote published. And not just published, but you were actually paid when they accepted them, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It was Hyacinths and Biscuits. It was a poetry magazine. And they were in Los Angeles, and of course, back then we didn't have the internet where you could find a lot of things. You had to find it through someplace else. And I entered, submitted 3 poems, The Horse, Sands of Time, and The Leopard. And they accepted them and paid me for them. That was kind of neat.
I bet. That was thrilling. Is that what, at the time, what your favorite writing was, poetry? Or that was just what that magazine used, so that's what you had submitted?
Well, that was with that magazine, but I was doing poems at first. I was younger, and I thought, I had this plan. I'll start with poetry, then stories, and go on and up like that. And that's how I did that. But I wrote stories, too. I mean, I had, back then, if it wasn't typed up, it was in my, I had a notebook full of stories written by longhand, so.
Right. And you basically have a theme to your stories. You also write under another name as well for your fiction stories, and even those have the haunted, mystical, supernatural themes to them as well. Your other name that you write under is Sapphire Feline. Is that how you say it?
Sapphire Feline. Feline is Celtic for wolf. And sapphire, of course, I took that idea because of my birthstone. And I thought that would make a good combination. It seems to work. And, I write erotic and sweet paranormal and fantasy romance, which sells very well, so I'm not about to put it down,
Is
Pamela
that,
writes. Pamela writes the horror, science fiction, straight stuff, and poetry, and articles, and of course nonfiction ghost books. Sapphire writes the romance stuff, so it seems to work.
Was that always, looking back, was that always your gist of how you wrote, like mysteries or horror? I mean, you know, as a child, 7 years old, not too, you know, too much, but were you always into, you know, the unexplained and the supernatural for the most part, or what did you start with?
Well, I wrote animal stories. Everybody writes animal. I liked animals, so I wrote animal stories. And I wrote scary stories, too, and I wrote science fiction, believe it or not. I guess much as, say, a young kid, like 8 years old, 9, 10, you know, would write that sort of stuff. And I rather had wrote stories than had to go in school and write all those boring essays that they made you want to do. I actually had a couple of awards for it. Asked my mother to take me to school at night to accept them because I wrote these stories. So I guess, you know, that was the way it was for me. But as I got older, you know, more and more, I mean, the ghost stuff, I mean, the nonfiction ghost stuff. I wasn't until high school. I read the first Hans Holzer stuff. And that was after I actually had, well, I've had experience all my life, but I actually had an experience with a famous haunted house. But I kind of knew about UFOs when I was younger. I mean, they had books out, and it wasn't like, you know, the abduction thing wasn't put in the books back then, but, you know, seeing sightings and maybe seeing a second, you know, people, maybe aliens from a distance. So I knew about that sort of stuff. And I read, of course, every kid's book for scary books. And plus, you know, I kind of was ahead of my, I could read up ahead of my time. So I was reading Edgar Allan Poe and stuff like that for more older. As I got older, I was more advanced than reading a lot of kids, so.
Right. I want to discuss with you the haunted Virginia and the haunted Richmond. Those are about legends, myths, and true stories that are there about haunted places and locations and things like that. How did you get to do that? Did you visit a lot of the places, or did you research what was written up about a lot of the well-known places and the stories behind them? How did you go about doing that?
Well, you know, I had a chance to write, and I started with Haunted Richmond, Virginia, which my editor was looking for people that wrote fiction, like to write real ghost stories. And I thought, well, heck, I can do that. I kind of read all stuff. I knew some stuff about Richmond. I knew about when I moved here. And I thought the scary part was the nonfiction angle. But, you know, I accepted my book proposal and start writing. First thing first was to get research. That means either buying books or going to the library and getting books, you know, different authors already writing this stuff out. Like, the famous one here is L.B. Taylor, and he's pretty well known in Virginia for writing a lot of ghost books. He has quite a lot. And in fact, I got to meet him again in person. He was one of the guests at the paranormal conference I was a guest at this past weekend. So it was kind of nice to talk to him and everything. I of course, went online, because there's a lot of stuff online that a lot of people don't know about yet. I mean, you know, and of course, Mr. Taylor, when he started writing his books, they weren't really that computer thing as there is today. So I learned, I figured the best place, next place to go was online. And I Googled places to do it, Virginia and Richmond and Ghost Hines. And, of course, there were a lot of them that were already out there, I knew, but there were a lot of them that weren't. And I go from there on and on. And, of course, some of these places I started calling and making, you know, talk to the people, ask for doing interviews. So that was kind of nice to get interviews, you know, to know things about what happened to the current owners of the places. Because, like, Mr. Taylor had Wrexham Hall up the street from me. He only had it up to 1980s. Well, two people owned it since the Gates passed away, Judge Keith passed away, and the Gates sold it. So there were two other people that were kind of owners of kind of a wedding and reception business there that has also parties. So there's two people since. And so I got to talk to the real current owner, and she told me about some of the stuff from the past owner, too, because she worked for them. So I kind of knew, you know, what's up to date on some of the stuff there. So that kind of helped me there. And, you know, of course, doing anything that happens to me, if I have an experience, it goes in my book. I mean, there's nothing I can say about it. I mean, people want to hear that, too. So that's how I did it. And I wrote it, and it got published. Went out on there with the Haunted Virginia Legend, Myth, and True Tales next.
So what, when you were on the ones that you got to interview the owners and things like that at, and you actually did go on the premises yourself?
Yeah, they let me on. They let me on and let me take pictures. Center Hill Mansion in Haunted Virginia, Richmond. Most times when people go there to just visit the place, it's a museum now, the house is a museum for the city of Petersburg. They're not allowed to take pictures inside. I was allowed to do that.
Okay.
So that was kind of nice.
And did you experience anything during
Yeah, I've had experiences, you know, off and on. I mean, I can tell you in Haunted Virginia, it's in my chapter with the section where Natural Bridge Hotel, from 2:30 to 6 p.m. that a.m. that morning, after we went to bed from traveling all over the place, you know, doing Natural Bridge, the caverns, and Professor Klein's on at Muscle 2 a.m., and then talking to the bartender about the ghost, you know, which is actually a manager that haunts the place. That night from 2:30, I woke up in the morning till 6 a.m. I had no sleep because I heard noises, purposely loud noises of paper rustling, things being picked up. Something kept blowing in my ear, trying to get my attention. I even used my digital recorder, and later on when I checked it, there was a man's voice on it. And at the end, when I finally said, well, heck with it, I'll stay up. Because my husband slept through this. He was so dead tired, I couldn't get him wake up. But I said, look, there's something happening in our room. I went to the bathroom, and I heard water come on next door from the sink next door. And I heard the shop next door. And I thought, oh, they probably rented it. They never did. The place was never rented. So, go figure, you know.
Right. Now, did you believe that places like that were for real prior to getting involved in these books?
Repeat the question
that,
again.
That hauntings exist and spirits are located at different places or buildings? Did you believe in it or just figure,
Well, some, you can debunk, some are really true. I believe in ghost stuff because I grew up with all this sort of stuff in a family that, for me, I've seen ghosts most of my life. I have a mother that could have dreams and predict or something, you know, like when my grandmother died, my uncle came to her in a dream, told her she was going to get a letter the following week on a certain date. She did. Same things on like that. So for me, it was nothing, you know, nothing was out of the ordinary for me. So for me, I do know there's the real thing. I know there's also legends, and people make up stories. Like in the Haunted Virginia book, the Bunny Man, he's an urban legend, yet I caught some orb or something changing shape of light blue color at high noon on a Sunday, and it's the last picture is on the back of my book, but it's not the Bunny Man. I can prove now this past weekend, there was at the paranormal conference at the Haunted Cavalier Hotel, the big store, one of the big stories that I thought was pretty strange, was it on the sixth floor, this guy in a bellhop uniform will tell people, go away, there's ghost, okay? There's ghost up here. And I'm thinking, why would a ghost? He was a ghost, because nobody said no one had like that for years. I thought, why would a ghost tell people to go away from the ghost? And then I heard another, that one of the workers heard from one of the workers that said they ran into this guy on a stairwell. He was in army uniform, military uniform, saying, look out, there's dead bodies up there. And suddenly I realized I found a sacrifice behind the bellhop, except this would be more logically the true story, because it was, for a while there, and during World War II, being owned by the Navy for a radar school, and I heard stories that either could have been maybe the dead bodies brought back from overseas, or they could have had their, because some bodies were washed up on shore when they had, you know, U-boats sink a couple of regular ships there, civilian ships. So, and of course, you know, they're not going to tell the cavalry when they got it back, we had dead bodies stored on some, you know, places up here. But so that was like a debunking the myth, to proving the true ghost story. Because sometimes, I guess, true ghost stories can be changed and people start selling, I mean, weird things like the Bunny Man.
Right. We want to give out your website to the listeners as well so they can have a look of your books and different things, and it is Fantastic Dreams, where you even have the covers of the books that you've written under both of your writing names.
Right. That's fantasticdreams.50megs.com. There is no www, so if anybody's interested, it's just the way that is. They can put it in, they'll get to the website.
Okay. What was the most fascinating experience that you had?
Golly, oh gosh. Actually, the most fascinating one was not in my book, but that's okay. Like this past weekend.
Right.
Oh, golly. It was an interesting weekend in that hotel. Let me tell you, it is really haunted. But I would say that would be the most fascinating. Of course, you know, I don't know if I get to write that because I don't know if she's going to allow me to do haunted hotels. But I'm still going to write it, but it won't be probably Schiffer in the long run. I know I'm right. Yeah. The most fascinating, gosh, there's so many of them, really interesting ones. I mean, you know, like I said, the Bunny Man, the story behind him, I thought that was an interesting story. And I also thought whoever created the Bunny Man kind of had a penchant for writing fiction, horror fiction,
right.
Like, pretty well then.
And for the listeners out there that aren't sure about that myth, you want to give a brief rundown of it?
Sure. It really was probably based on a couple of police reports from the 1970s. There was a man in a bunny suit. Okay, this is the whole thing. It's in a bunny suit, white bunny, like Easter Bunny.
Right.
He had one time thrown at some people in a car, a couple in a car, and the other one was chopping away on this housing being built in a housing development. So that was where the true story was, because the librarian up there actually went to look to see what was the truth behind the Bunny Man. There had to be some kind of truth. Well, the story is that was made up, and I have no idea. I'm sure nobody does who started it, but somebody started in the 70s, and supposedly these bunch of convicts, lunatics, escaped from this prison called Lofton, which did not exist up in Fairfax County, in the 1900s. And they came to the area in the woods where the Bunny Man Bridge is. And the Bunny Man killed all his other people, all the other convicts. And, of course, to survive, he killed a lot of rabbits, and he'd find his rabbit skins all over the woods, hanging on the trees, and things like that. The kids actually believe in this, between teenagers to young adults in college, actually on Halloween, that they try to go there, and supposedly that they go there, they might see the Bunny Man at midnight. So that's the urban legend, and, you know. It's an interesting urban legend, kind of like a serial killer in a bunny suit. And the funny thing is it actually inspired a cult movie too, which is Donnie Darko. So,
right. So, would you say out of all of the myth stories, that's the biggest one with the most people believing it's for real?
There's a lot of them, but just that, yeah, a lot of kids believe it's real. It's a tradition I gather up there. The other one that actually has a real sighting, but it's a big tradition too, is the Cahokia Light, and it's in my second book, but it's going to be in my, definitely, the one I'm writing in now, because I'm writing in the area, the historic, what they call the historic triangle, in other words, Williamsburg, Charles City County, Williamsburg, James City County, and Yorktown, plus Charles City, and West Point is in that area. And the Cahokia Light, I hope I'm pronouncing that light, that name right, is supposedly set by railroad tracks, and there's two legends behind it. Whichever one is right, people have seen the white orb, I mean, with their eyes. And people have gone there for years, especially a teenage thing, to go and see if you can see the white orb, the light. But there's two legends behind that one. One of them is that in Cold Harbor, Civil War battlefield up here in Richmond, a lot of Civil War Confederate soldiers were wounded, and they were put on this train, which was going toward West Point, and it disappeared. That's one legend. The second one is there's a brakeman that lost his head. And so he's supposedly searching for his head with a light. He's holding a lantern. And that's the light, his lamp, and he's searching for his head. So those are the two stories, the legends behind the light. But people have actually seen the light, a lot of people. So it's an interesting thing there. I know I went there, I found it, I got orbs in a picture, but I got a really weird thing in my EVP, which is my electronic digital recorder. In other words, it was silent, and really silent, and then I got a giant gust of wind for a while, but then went silent. What the gust of wind is, I don't know. All I know is it was a silent, quiet night that night. It was cold, bone-chilling cold, because it was a freezing first Saturday in January, and Virginia had been going through a lot of cold spells at that time.
Right.
But it was as quiet as can be, so there was no wind, no breeze, no nothing. What that was, but it sounded like gust of wind going through in my recorder and was in the middle of it. But
wow.
it's another tradition. Everybody likes to go up there and catch the light, so.
Right, right. And did you happen to see the light? You got pictures of...
No, I just got some orbs now. I don't know if that means anything. Considering you think it's a light, it's probably an orb people are seeing with their eyes, a bright one. But the wind was very interesting. I had no idea what the wind was meant. I said, maybe it's the train. Maybe that's the true legend. I said, think about it, wind.
Right?
I'm thinking, going fast by. I mean, I don't know what it was. That's interesting, you know.
Right.
Catching wind when there was no wind, no breeze.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about the book that you write, that are the fiction books.
Right.
You started with those, right?
Yes, I started writing fiction. It's kind of just fun to use my imagination and make up things. I mean, I've written fictional ghost stories, and I know I can tell people that real ghosts aren't going to do exactly what a fictional ghost do, but that's what's different with fiction. You're trying to scare somebody intentionally, and I'm not trying to scare anybody intentionally with the nonfiction. To me, that's just
that
trying to teach
them. Is that the reason, Pam, that you are writing under two different names?
No, Sapphire writes
the real from the fiction separate?
No. Pamela writes fiction. I write horror and that. That's the ghost stories. But Sapphire writes erotic paranormal romance. And the only reason I use Sapphire, the synonym, because I thought the erotic part might bring people that are strange sometimes. So far, I have never had any problems with that at all. But, you know, that's the only reason. But there's a lot of writers that actually use synonyms. Nonfiction, that's just something they do, that's all.
Right. I didn't know if it had something to do with...
No. Nothing to do with the writing. Nothing to do with writing fiction. No. A lot of people know I write nonfiction and fiction, so it's not like...
Right. Which of your fiction would you say, the most fun for you to do?
Believe it or not, was one. Usually when I write, you know, somebody says when they write fiction, they base off, and I'm sure I base a lot of my fiction off something. I mean, in my life you have experiences and you probably dimly remember it in the back of your head. But I think the best one that I can say was based off real stuff was one called Donating, which was a vampire one. Vampire plasma machine, of all things, which shows you that. That my head can think of. I used to give plasma in this place in Richmond, downtown Richmond. You get paid for it. And I thought one day, because they had a vampire movie on, they let you watch so you won't, you know, either there you can read a book so you can get done with the plasma part. And I realized, I said, these things are vampires too. I mean, that makes an interesting story. So I wrote a story, and the people in it actually are based off people that work there. I mean, I may have changed some identities and names, but... Definitely, like one guy used to wear a pocket in his lab coat with a lot of pens, and it looked like a plastic grasshopper head popping out among it. So it's in the story, too. And I think it's going to be published probably this year because originally it had been accepted and I'd been paid by the Citizens magazine. Then the publisher got ill. Well, he started getting back to normal, and he had just published last year one of them again. So he asked me if I was, I said, sure, you can, it's yours. I mean, I'd never pushed it anywhere, so he paid me for it. And so I said, you're going to do it? I mean, you already paid for me, so I assume that will be out in the magazine. But it's called Donating, and, a vampire plasma machine.
That's pretty neat.
And it was funny because when he originally, when I sent it to him, he was like, he said he was going to write, he wanted, his magazine was monster stories, but he was never going to accept a vampire story because there's so many vampire stories out there.
Right.
In every which way, but he said mine was different, so I guess not too many people have ever written about vampire plasma machines.
What advice do you have for those that love writing and would want to get started getting published or even just submissions published in a community paper or magazine?
The best thing to do, join a writer's group. I'm sure there's always one in your area. If not, then there's got to be one online. And, of course, you're probably going to trust them. Make sure that the writer's group fits you, that you like them. Because sometimes, you know, you may go for one or two of them before you find the right one. But a writer's group is good to have because there's other people that'll critique your work and that'll help you, you know, get the best work you can because, you know, they'll see the forest for the trees. That it's hard for one person when you're writing your own book. That's like your own baby. But they'll be able to see it better and they'll say a few things and they'll write it better. So a writer's group is a good thing to join. If you can join any organizations that'll help, you know, it's a lot of them are tax deductible. Like under my romance name, I'm a member of Romance Writers of America. Number one, it's a good thing I joined them because the local group. I've learned a lot of things on the business side of writing that I didn't know. That helps me a lot, and so I helped me with that. And it's tax deductible, so that's one thing about that too. And then just keep writing. Writing every day, and then when you have something that you feel is ready and polished that you want to submit, just go through magazines or online. There's places that you can find. Like I go to Raylan.com because I write horror, science fiction, fantasy, and it tells me up there different places. Maybe they're looking at anthologies, they're looking for short stories, and one of mine might fit it or something like that, and then you just submit it exactly like the guidelines ask you to do. That's all. Nothing more than that, and just keep on writing every day. You probably get rejections. Everybody does. But that, just keep on writing and keep on submitting.
What is your feelings on this? There's a lot of self-publishing out there that's done now that people go and look at to do.
You mean self-publishing? I only had a couple of one anthology that was self-published. A group did that. And it did really well. Surprisingly, it was nominated for recommended for a nomination for Bram Stoker. Didn't make the final cut, but it was recommended. And sometimes, but still, if you can do a publisher first, I would try that first. If you have a book done, agent or a publisher, try that because you'd be surprised who you might find. There's a lot of them out there now. There's a lot of, not just regular big publishers, there's small press, which are good. There's e-publishers, so. A lot of people are now buying.
There's also You Hear It Said, Pamela, that don't go the self-publishing route because it's looked down upon and...
It's not just frowned upon. Think about it. You're going to have to really, you have to work hard with your own work, regular work. You publish to a publisher, even in New York, you're going to have to promote. But as a self-published person, you're going to have a lot of copies, you're going to have to make sure they're sold. And you're going to have to make sure you put probably a lot of promotions out there on it. And you have to think about it that maybe it might be easier to have the publisher do that, or at least if it's going to be sold somewhere, the publisher can put them up in places that if you have to take your self-published novel, you're going to want to get it on Amazon. It's going to cost. It costs because you're going to have to pay certain things to get, ISBN and all that stuff on it. A publisher, they do that automatically as part of the deal, so you don't have to worry about that part. So there's some benefits to, I hate to say it, to being with a publisher, but I've never really had, I'm not against self-publish. I've read some pretty good ones, but I still go through publishing. I figured, there's so many of them out there now. E-publishing, not now it's an e-publisher. ebooks right now are outselling print. That was on Publishers Weekly, so
right.
You'd be surprised.
Right.
You'd be surprised what, you know, a person could submit to. So,
what is the norm, especially somebody that has had a book published in the past and they're brand new submitting? What is the norm with getting paid? They accept the book and you get paid based on as it sells?
It depends on the contract. It depends on it. Some, like New York, some of them, they have an advance, I've heard. I haven't gotten to that one. I think I've got an urban fantasy I want to submit to agents or to New York publishers, and they give you an advance for that. Of course, you still have to sell so many books to cover that so you get any more royalties after that with an advance. Small press publishers, e-publishers will give you royalties. E-books usually are probably, depends on the publisher, but maybe between 35% to 50% of the sales of your book. So say your book's $5 and it's 50% by the publisher, it's $2.50. Or, you know, 40% like that. Comparably, print will be a little bit less because they have to get it published somewhere, print it up and all that stuff, you know, so that's a little different there. So you're only going to get probably less percent of that. But still, you're getting royalties. I've gotten royalties. Schiffer, I get royalties off the from my publishing. And I get it twice a year, which they do really well, sending them to me and all that. So, you know, it depends, you know. It's depends on the publisher and all that, you know, and what your contract says.
I guess, how long does it take you on average to write a book? I guess it depends on what it is and...
It depends. If it's fiction, the urban fantasy took me quite a few months. But that's fiction and getting it edited and several times. That's totally a different thing. The easier books for me to actually write are the nonfiction. Because,
right.
You know, you don't have to write in a section, you know, go start from chapter. For me, it's chapter one. Some people say they don't, but I have to have at least part of the ending, and then I have to go from chapter one to the ending and all that. The nonfiction I can write sporadically. I do put them in separate chapters when I'm done with writing them. I do add maybe a little bit more. Then I have to insert, of course. Then I put it into a whole book thing when I'm ready, and then I have to insert sections for the pictures. That they have their section, but how they want it done. But that Haunted Virginia, writing it and researching and writing, researching it took the summer. And the writing it took about a month because it took longest with the research. Haunted Richmond
right.
took within a month the most of both of it because that was a lot easier and that was in town. But the other one took longer because the summer because I had to go to different parts of Virginia in order to do that first. And then I wrote it and that took real easy a month. Like I said, you know, you got on the chapters and then you figure you range it to how you want it to look. And of course you have to insert your thing to do it, the picture, so they're going to go in and that. And, of course, actually the longest of the nonfiction books is the bibliography. And not the bibliography, the Virginia, the index. Where you put in all the index, that took the longest.
Was it?
But that's because I think it's because it's all over Virginia. And that just takes a long time to get everything you want in there.
I want to give out the phone number again to the listeners if they're just tuning in. If you'd like to call in and you have a question for Pamela this evening, we're taking your calls. The number's 888-345-3025. Outside the U.S. and Canada, the number's 740-994-0101. And you're listening to the Mixed Talk. This is Sarah by Misha. I'm Misha here with Pamela K. Kinney. And Pamela's website is fantasticdreams.50megs.com. You can see all her work on the site. And you can also, you're on Twitter and Facebook as well, correct?
Right, I'm on Facebook. I'm always willing to. I'm under my regular name, Pamela K. Kinney. I'm under Sapphire Feline, and I'm also under Fans of Pamela K. Kinney. The reason I put the Fans of Pamela as a fan page is because some of them, you know, are fans of my book. I'll communicate with the other one and gladly join you. I mean, that one's got everybody on it. It's got my friends and relatives and everybody you can name on Pamela's, but the other two are fan pages, so for those that like my work, that makes it nice for them too.
When did your first book get published?
When I first get published? Well, you mean when I first got really published?
When you first got your first book. I know your poems got published when you were 17.
Gosh, I got e-books when I first got published, and actually one print book. It was 2006. The print book was actually four short stories, like a novella more, and that got published by one Naked Snake Press. It was four ghost stories called Beyond the Four Walls. And then in 2006, also about the same month, I got my first e-book out, which was under Sapphire Feline's. That was Crimson Promise. That was kind of like a science fiction vampire paranormal. So that was the first two books in 2006. After that, it went out from there.
You've been writing up a storm.
Yeah, I tried. I figure I better do it while I can. You know, they say, are the irons hot? You might as well keep writing, right?
Right.
Can't rest on your laurels, as they say.
I guess you go through writer's block, or for the most part, when a story comes to you, you know what
you're doing? Generally, I don't. I think the only time I have it, I might term writer's block, and I don't know if it really was when I was 7 years before I started writing again. From 1990 to 1997, I worked this one job. I liked the job, the people I worked with, but I guess maybe it was, I could think of maybe it's because I worked some nights and some days and, you know, back and forth, but I didn't do any writing those 7 years. So of any kind, not even if it wasn't, you know, to be published, I didn't do any kind of writing.
You didn't do anything
other than writing a letter.
For yourself.
So I guess that was writer's block. I guess if anything was called writer's block. But I really haven't had writer's block. I kind of think of too much, I think. Sometimes I got to force myself to do one thing at a time, then go on to the next thing. Otherwise, I mean, these stories will just want to come out of me.
Is that the hardest part for you?
Yeah, they want to come out of your head. They just want you to demand to be written down. You're going, no, I got this one thing I got to finish first. You can hold on. You'll be there next.
So you basically know, you know, the whole set, the characters, and how do you pick the names of your characters?
Sometimes I'll have to look up things for names, and sometimes it just comes to me a name, so it depends on how it comes. It depends if it comes on, or just like I said, I have to look up. And you got the internet, so now you can look up. There's lots of, you know, baby name books, and
right.
Different languages now, different country baby name books. So I got links, you know, reserved somewhere so I can find them, you know, bookmarked and go check up a name.
I want to ask you about yourself. Earlier in the beginning of the show, you were saying it was your mom or your grandmom?
My mother always used to have dreams. I guess you could say we were psychic, but she was psychic, and that she actually would say somebody come to her in a dream, and they would, like, my uncle came in a dream one time. I'm sure there was probably more than the two I know there was, but she talked about, I was younger, and she says, his uncle came to me in a dream, Uncle Joey, and he said, next week, and she named the day. This has been years ago, and I was real young, when she was going to get a letter in the mail telling that grandmother died, and she did, exactly. Years later, I remember she told me, she comes and says, oh, your friend Jeanette came to me in a dream, and she's going to call you tomorrow on the phone. And I'm listening to her, and I'm looking at her, and I'm 18. I'm going, Mom, Jeanette doesn't know where I'm at. I haven't seen her since we moved away from when I went to middle school or junior high in seventh grade, and I'm out of high school, and we live somewhere else in the county, and she doesn't know where I'm at. Guess what? She called the next day. So it's like, you know, she was always right direct on that, literally.
Did your mom do readings for people, or did
no, she, no, 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 no. My mother wouldn't do all that stuff, but she could do those dreams. I mean, you know, pretty accurate. I don't know, don't worry. I mean, you know.
And how about yourself? What did you inherit?
Me, I think I'm more of a medium. That's my scary thing. I happened this whole week, and that was the whole thing with this week in my room and the haunted hotel. I think someone wanted to contact me, and I finally figured out what I should have known years ago, to say a prayer and say, just leave me alone. And it worked at least for the night. But no, yeah, I have abilities, like I said, see ghosts. And I think that's coming more and more since I've gotten back into writing the ghost books. Plus, I do a paranormal investigating with a group sometimes. I think because of that, I think my abilities to have all them contact me is coming back. So
it's developed more, yes.
They want me to,
more
they want to talk to
the more
me.
You're using it. Now, do they speak to you too, where you hear them?
I've heard them with the paranormal group. Everybody else has too, like one place called Ferry Plantation. I've heard a little girl, and I heard another voice that actually got caught up, captured on my EVP, on my digital recorder, so it's pretty well. But then everybody else said they heard the little girl. I don't know if the guy that was with me heard the other voice, but I got caught that on my digital recorder, so it's not like I wasn't backed up. But I did hear this past weekend, the last day, I kept listening on my recorder earlier, and I didn't hear it, but I was in one of the hallways that I didn't do of the hotel in the fifth floor, and I remember asking if anybody was there, and I heard this whisper go in the hallway. And I know someone said, my neighbor goes, I said, no, paranormal investigator, let me tell you, in that hotel, they're not going to say anything that isn't going to be, because they know better. Everybody else is investigating. I think that place was quiet. They were downstairs, but, and that was in the hallway. I heard it. And I said, right, not far away. But that one made me laugh. I kept thinking, well, maybe they're tired of us investigating them. You know, who knows? I mean, someone said, well, maybe it was a kid. I said, I don't know. I think it was just probably someone tired of us investigating. That was their no. But I like that. No.
Yeah.
Nobody here. No.
Do you have encounters in daily life at all, or just when you're out on the investigations or doing the...
Probably on investigation. I'm sure they probably could if they want to. I really think that I'm a strong-willed person, and my fear, I think, has always been, and I know I could be, because I learned this years ago with a well-known psychic that used to give, like, seance classes, but she always taught us how to say a prayer to keep us protected so we don't get the bad things. I remember once a voice coming out of me, and I remember this, and my husband looked at, he was my boyfriend, and he looked at me really, really funny, like, what the heck? And I asked him later, he said, yeah, it did. I had a man's voice come out of my mouth. And I realized that I said, I probably had the ability, if they want to take, you know, get inside my body and talk out of me. And I always had the fear that I may not be strong enough for those that want to stay in and kick them out. So that's probably my fear. And I do say that, remember, I say my house is not haunted. Now, my son argues with me. He's had a couple of experiences in here. But I say it's not, maybe it's because it's probably forcefully inside me and telling nobody to come in my house. This is my place. It's like I told the hotel when I went in that room. I said, right off the bat, this is my room. I don't mind during the daytime. I don't care if you hear flashing in front of me. But at night when I'm ready to go to bed, I don't want to wake up and find you staring at me. I don't want you following me into the shower or in the toilet. I have, these are my private times. This is my time. This is my room alone then. I'm renting it. I remember, I said that. I said, I don't want you. And I know that somebody was letting me know they were there, because I had a room full of flower smell at one point. Walking in, it was like somebody had a room. I had a room full of flowers in there. That's what it smelled like. And another time, I found a petal. And this is funny, because these petals, I gather, were given to a lot of the women. And a lot of them on floors, okay? And they said that the hotel said they had Valentine's Day, and they had them strewn all over the lobby. I guess something they had going on, because they're normally closed for hotel business-wise, doing stuff for the summer, so everything else is kind of like whatever they got going on, weddings or something. And they said, made some rooms. Now, I said, I can understand the floor. If someone found something on the floor.
Right.
But the funny thing is for me, I was getting ready for bed, and I was turning around, and I'm looking down at the bed, and it's like something was dropped there for a second or whatever, or put there. And I saw it moving, a bright red thing. And I had no glasses on. I didn't have my contacts on, but I could see it. And I reached down when it stopped and picked it up and saw this fake petal of a fake rose. And I freaked out, and I went downstairs. The people I know that that's what they found there, and they were, is this what you found? I go, yeah, that's what we found. And the funny thing is I had put it in my book bag, just put it away.
Right.
The next morning it was gone.
Was it?
It was completely gone, nowhere in any of my stuff in the room, so maybe I upset it. Upset the guy, or I assume it was a guy. I was hearing stories about these petals from people finding them in places they didn't expect to find them, and stuff like that. But mine, I said, mine disappeared.
It's Mark, and they wanted them back.
So yeah, it was a pretty big thing. But it tried to get me to listen to it that night. I kept throwing something playing with my hair. I thought I said, leave me alone. I said the prayer. But the next night, it left me alone. I did that. And so it was fine until morning. Then it came on, let me know by blinking all the lights. But there's other things it did, too. So I assume, yeah, I have abilities that they want to communicate with me somehow.
Well, you're in control with what you want to do and not do. And for our listeners out there, too, that, the same thing, if they're concerned about, their own living quarters, their home, their apartment, whatever, saying the prayers and, laying the demands. It's your residence. and you have to, be firm and... lay the ground rules. What was in your goings about the most true story that was the most upsetting for people, where they were really, really afraid?
Really, really afraid? Golly,
yeah.
True story? I don't. No, per se. I'm trying to think of any that would be anybody would be.
It's basically hearing noises and things like that, and
surprisingly,
moving.
The most people I talk to, most of the ghost stories that had places like that really weren't that bothered. I think probably. Let me look through this, see if there's anything here that looks like it might be. I don't think so. I mean, at the street, Rixham Hall, I know that she said she's not scared, okay? And I'm sure she isn't most of the time with Susanna. And there's supposedly, I gather, someone said civil soldiers there because the house had been used at one point, a hospital. Of course, everything in Richmond at one point during the Civil War has been a hospital generally, if it's not a, a warehouse or something like that, which is very interesting. But there was one thing she told me that the former owners that she worked for did, and of course the Gates did too when they lived there, was that every time, like she was watching TV, and they did the same thing, where they were watching TV, okay, they would hear noises come from up on the landing on the second floor outside of what was Susanna's room, which is now the bride's dress in before they go to the wedding. That's where they dress at. And they would hear the voices talking. So they all did the same thing. They turned the TV up to drown out the voices. Of course, Donna said, I'm not scared. Donna said, I'm not scared, but she drowned out the voices. And she did the same thing at the... It was funny because Gates was in somewhere else. Talked about it, Gates. Somebody else told me about the Gates did that, Mr. and Mrs. Right. Gates, Judge Gates and Mrs. Gates. And of course, later on, like her employees that she employer she worked with on the business that she does now own, did the same thing. So that was interesting, you know, turn up the TV to drown out the voices.
Well, we got about only 5 minutes left. You are going to be coming up with another book.
Right.
That you're doing. What can you briefly say about that? And
okay.
Do you know when it's going to be released yet?
I have to May to turn it in, the manuscript. I can say once it's turned in May, it could be the end of the year. It might be the beginning of next year. That I won't know until they kind of tell me, Schiffer. It will be about the historic Triangle area in Charles City. Charles City is between where I'm living at and Williamsburg. That's used to be part of Chesterfield, but now it's also part of and they, like one woman said, this is part of historic Triangle area too. But the historic Triangle area is Williamsburg, which includes Colonial Williamsburg, James City, which includes Jamestown, which is cut hauntings and other stuff behind it. At all, which is, you know, first English settlement in the United States. And, of course, Yorktown, where a lot of Revolutionary and Civil War battles went on and stuff.
Right.
So I'll be doing a lot of that. And I do have, and believe me, I can tell you right now, people, I did have a lot of experiences in some of these places, so they will be in the book. So.
Because you actually went there.
Yeah, not just went there. I actually had experiences, so things happened. Believe me, the last one was just this past Friday, Thursday, on the way down to stay at the hotel the night before the conference. I stopped at Boxwood Inn, which is in Newport News, which is very haunted. And there's, yeah, we had a couple of experiences there so during our interview, so.
So they can keep their eye out for release dates for that book and get all the haunting details.
Right.
When it's released. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight and joining me. We are with Pamela K. Kinney this evening. Her website for her books and... you'll have your info for your new book when it's coming out at all on there. Again, the website's fantasticdreams.50megs.com. And my website is www.tarotbymisha.com. My email's tarotbymisha@aol.com. Next week, we will be talking astrology. So until next week, have a great one, everybody. Pamela, thanks for being here. Good night.
Thank you for having me. Good night.